If you have a good code base, you're working like a software engineer, these features as they come on, you're talking about 2 days. I've done things in an hour that have taken me, I kid you not, a month before. We are in a brand new world of being able to interact with the tech we write in day in and day out. As long as you know what you're doing and you know what to look for, it is crazy efficiency. You are building things from scratch. Even just a month ago, the tools that were generating front ends from scratch, they were fine, but jobs aren't going away. They're just changing.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Shipping Excellence. I'm Andrew Duncan, and today I have with me Aram Hamuda, who is a staff engineer here at Vertice Labs. And today we're going to talk about how using AI coding agents in our professional development environment ultimately allows us to produce rapidly high-quality software products. And Aram's been in the trenches with us for a while now shipping products, and he's going to share some of his experience with us. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Duncan. It's an absolute pleasure. And this is a topic I'm very excited to chat about. It's, as you know, has been a renaissance in how we build code. So very excited to kind of dive deep into that.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess let's just start with, what does it mean to have an AI coding agent in your development environment?
It has completely changed the way developers like you and I have been able to serve clients and serve especially small businesses nowadays. I've been coding as a software engineer for coming up on a decade now, and it is a brand new world out there. AI, I remember when GitHub had their preview program for Copilot, I started using it, and I was telling everyone I knew, I'm like, this is gonna change everything, and here we are, 2025, and they're a dime a dozen now, so very excited and dive deep.
Yeah, 100%. You know, GPT-5 just came out, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that. And it was very clear that they are targeting this, augmenting software engineers with the ultimate goal probably to automate the majority of what we do. And the ability that it has to produce high quality code is, you know, at least from what I've seen, has significantly grown. So I guess if you've seen any difference between GPT-5 and GPT-4.0, which is what we used before. What have you noticed, any improvements in the quality or the speed at which it can deliver features?
It's definitely more of an iteration than a brand new platform, that's for sure. But like everything else, these increments are saving hours and hours in each different place. And it's really around some of that repetitive tasks that you're kind of doing as its knowledge base gets updated, as developers are feeding back into that life cycle of all of these agents, we're really kind of seeing where it excels. And like you said, it's automating our jobs, but in the best way possible.
Yeah, I probably said this a lot on the show, but there's been this longstanding fear that AI is going to take people's jobs. And sort of the counter thought to that is, well, AI is not going to take the job, but someone using AI will. You know, that's because, you know, for my own personal use, and I'm sure everyone who's watching this episode has used AI, you can produce a lot of stuff now quickly, right? And if you know how to prompt well, you can get it to do 10 times the amount of work you would otherwise have to do. So talk to me a little bit about, like, what differences are in your day-to-day workflow now that you use AI to build software?
I feel a lot more like a technical project manager at this stage in the game than I do more just kind of a, you know, grunt churning developer at this point, but it's not a bad thing. I definitely still write as much code as I did before, but my output is what is getting that kind of 10x that comes with it. You know, I'm sure we'll dive into this as we talk about, you know, some of the different phases and use cases of AI and specifically LLMs and their role as software engineering. But it allows me to really take a step back and view the bigger picture of what that project is. I'm no longer spending, you know, a couple of days debugging some weird niche error that might have taken me, you know, 10, 20 hours in previous years. I truly do have a junior developer. I can go assign work on this and help me figure out why this little nitpicky thing isn't working. And I can focus on the project and the feature as a whole. You know, as you said before, it's not here to take our jobs, but it's here to accelerate the people who are using it For any of you who doom scroll LinkedIn all day long like I do, I'm sure you've seen that on your favorite tech bros post. Don't worry, it's not coming for you, but it's coming to make you better at your job. And without a doubt, like all other tools we use in our day-to-day, this is accelerating things just, you know, at a rate we haven't seen in quite a few years.
Yeah, I actually just had a conversation with someone, and something you said was really interesting. It was, you said you had a, you know, you feel more like a technical project manager and that you have a junior developer, right? And I was telling someone recently, I said, you can think of our engineers as running a team of engineers, but you only need one person, and the team are the AI agents. So can you talk to me a little bit about what that looks like tangibly, like in practice, you know, running multiple background agents, taking information from a conversation and using that to build the feature?
Yeah, of course. As any lean and mean team will tell you, the features are built in those project planning meetings, not in the hours your devs are spent figuring out how to code and build it. The internet is huge and vast, and something I've often told junior developers as they're getting started is there's a million ways to code any one given thing. Someone has figured it out. They know how to do it in some shape or form. Your job is just to turn that feature and that block of code into something that benefits the business, brings real value into the product you're delivering. So, as a software engineer, my role has kind of shifted. I'm no longer focused on doing these little, you know, kind of nitty gritty tasks, but I'm more figuring out how can we get these features to connect. As a more senior developer, a lot of what I'm doing does get offboarded from my AI agents nowadays. I'm no longer building individual tests and figuring out, you know, how I need to get everything to happen in line. Rather, I'm kind of thinking about the use cases and edge cases for that test, building that out, and then working with this agent to write code that satisfies that test. All the same steps are there. The job hasn't changed, just some of the individual actions you're doing in between are a little bit easier now.
Yeah, one of the things that has been paramount to all of the successful software projects that I've delivered, it has been the bridging of idea, right? So the business problem, you know, whether that's, you know, automation of internal business processes or solving a problem for a customer, right? So the idea, right, the solution, and then bridging that gap from the conversation to something that is coded and working in the real world. And so shortening that gap is ultimately how you engineer, right? It is the most efficient way that you can deliver a solution. And so what I found is through all of the AI tools that are available today, the note takers, the coding agents, the design tools, right? Even the AI off-the-shelf coding agents that you can use, like Lovable or Replit or Rourke. What I have found is all of these tools have made it significantly easier to bridge that gap. You'll have an hour-long conversation about a feature in your planning session, and then someone has to go and put that into Jira or into Linear, and then someone has to go write the code for it, and then someone has to test it. And then every person across that team has to remember the context. And those could be, it could be weeks between that first conversation and the time that it's rolling out to production. And I have found the tools allow us to capture that context and every little detail about that context and feed that context all the way through. So tell me a little bit about how, like, reducing the amount of cognitive load, you know, in that process has helped produce higher quality outputs.
I'd say one of the biggest things that has changed to me is I really have to think more about the system architecture and setting more standards, because like I was just saying before, there's a million ways that an AI agent can look and figure out how to solve this problem, and 99% of them are gonna work probably fine, but in that isolated incident it might not be the best way to build it. So the way the job has really changed, at least for developers like myself, working on kind of projects where you have, you're really relying on these AI agents to kind of pick up the slack where you don't have an actual manpower. It's really setting the standard and maintaining code quality across the project. One of the biggest things I've noticed, especially having a chance to build a project for a client from scratch using only AI and taking these AI tools and working on projects and code bases that are a few years old, is really getting it, trying to wrangle it in. It wants to do everything because it can do everything. It's got the knowledge base of, you know, millions of people who are working and training these things and all of the code they've written and trying to isolate it down to just kind of get it to focus a little bit more. Those are some of the new challenges I say that would have come up, but they've replaced some of the older ones. For example, and I'm sure every software dev out there might be their favorite thing, I'm no longer writing regex, something that would take me completely out of what I'm doing. I'm trying to remember,
I hate regex.
Oh, absolutely. I would be going on Google trying to figure out, what do I need to do for this? I'm on Stack Overflow. Well, they have a similar use case. Let me copy and paste that. Now let me dive into the string, isolate to exactly what I want. Sure, it might only take 15 minutes for a complicated query, but that's 15 minutes where you are stopping what you were doing. You are completely changing your mental focus. But here, tools like Cursor, Copilot, all these inline editors, you describe what you want. It uses the context of your schemas. I've never had AI generate bad regex, and little isolated things like this really speed up my workflow. And we have tools like Claude that come out now that can fully build features and handle pull requests. It now shows up on your repository instead of your contribution. It shows Claude as a co-contributor to it. We truly do have AI working as developers for us, and that brings good and bad. It's really just adding new challenges and removing old ones.
Yeah, it's a different way of working, right? Like the workflow itself has changed. And so there's an adaptation that has to happen when the workflow changes, right? And so that adaptation is, right now you're looking at Claude's PRs and you're trying to evaluate whether it's did it find a real problem, right? Did it find a real bug? And is that worth attention, or is that something that we deprioritize, right? And so I agree, it's changed the way we work, and it's changed in the way that everyone works. I just posted on LinkedIn, I found in Stripe's documentation, we were looking at their documentation for a client, where they have the ability now, you can look at their documentation, there's a copy for LLM button, you can click that and it just gives you the markdown of that documentation page that you can paste right into your LLM. And then depending on how your workflow is set up, you could feed that into a feature into Cursor. You could feed that into an MCP server to create tickets and linear. And that brings up another thought that I have for you. You have integrated with Linear's MCP server to help augment or automate our ticket management process. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. MCP servers, like a bunch of these new features that come out, have been a huge game changer, because it really does, like you were saying, it gives that kind of awareness into the product you're working on, especially how rapidly things are built nowadays. LLMs take time and money and resources, and like you said, ChatGPT-5 just came out, it replaced it, and it has a more up-to-date knowledge base. But if you remember back when GPT-3.5 came out, I think it was a few years outdated at that point. So the ability for a tool to plug in to a database that you were using day in and day out that changes and understand what's happening, it's game-changing. In the case of Linear, for someone like me, I'm often working on multiple projects. So, being able to context switch and remember what I'm doing and have a starting point is huge. So what I do whenever I start working for a client, I go into my agent, I pull up and connect to Linear. I'm like, hey, let's go through all the issues, look at my last updated ones, give me a refresher of where I'm at. Something as simple that might take, 20 minutes of reading through issues and updates and seeing where everyone else is, it's now instantaneous. I know what I need to work on. As I'm progressing and working through it, I'm using my agents to kind of assist me, brainstorming. It's like having a pair programmer next to me. At the end of my work session, I can copy all those conversations back into that first one, let it know, hey, here's what I've worked on. Let's go ahead and update Linear, post everything there. Catch me up so I don't have to do these little management tasks. I'm sure other introverted devs like myself out there will relate to this one. Being in project management meetings, going through the nitty-gritty of updating tickets and catching everyone up and just trying to have a commit message more than fixed number 1, 2, 3. It's huge because it lets me do the things I'm really good at and offload the things I'm not without taking up a whole nother person's time. I'm guilty of it. I would offload that work somewhere else. I'm like, hi, project manager, here's what I've done. And now it's your responsibility to go update all these things for me. And They don't want to do that. They have their own things they're good at. They're not great at conveying my notes into my work. So small wins like that give everyone a little bit more time back. When everyone has a little bit more time back, we get to focus on the things we really like doing and are really good at doing.
100%. I am also guilty of aiding the project management aspect of it. I don't want to update the ticket status or respond to your comment or write my own comment. You know, I want to write the code. I want to test the code. I want to ship the code. I want it to work in production, right? And I think that's like the bane of existence for a lot of engineers who get stuck in that in project management hell, where they're in meetings to talk about the status and the planned release and the, you know, all of the little details that you have to do to make sure that the train is running on the tracks. So talk to me a little bit about how this has helped deliver high quality products with fewer meetings.
The best way I can think to describe it right now is we're not taking someone and upskilling them with a bunch of bloat and misunderstanding of things. I'm a software engineer. I know what I'm really good at doing. All of that extra stuff, it's like a knife sharpener. You don't add on clay to the side of the knife and try to form a sharp point because you just get a weird, dull experience. A knife sharpener's goal is to remove the excess and leave what's underneath, a nice sharp pointed piece of work. That is how I feel when I'm using these AI tools. It is taking away the things I might not be great at doing, I might not love doing, or in the example I were talking about earlier with all this document lookup, that I know how to write code, I know how to work with libraries and interfaces, but I might not know the new kid on the block's front end library or what the heck, you know. I might not have checked the status update on the most recent React release or something like that. It's really just pulling all that information in and refining it so I can do what I'm best at.
Yeah. Aram's humble, so he won't necessarily say this, but he's been instrumental in helping us refine and standardize our processes as we're building an AI native product development firm. And so he's put in a place, the project management MCP server. He's helped set the standard for how we embed the AI agents in our coding environments and how we interface with clients and take conversations that we have with clients and, you know, streamline the ideation to the execution. And so he's been paramount in us being able to continue to deliver time and time again. So I guess tell everyone how we integrate AI into our process.
Yeah, of course. Like you said, we take that AI first approach and we look to see what gaps it can fill while utilizing our strongest members. For one of our clients, as we are working to build and get their product ready for release, a lot of the little stages that we're kind of going through, it allows us to expand on. So a good example that I might use is the way I often work in our code bases is I set up a golden rule. I'm still writing a lot of our original code from scratch first because I've been doing this a long time. I have a way that I know works well for me, has worked well with other development teams, and AI is all over the place. It's really good, but it's not very refined in that regard. So I saw this on LinkedIn a few years ago when Cursor started releasing their rules API to allow their agents to kind of access and view it. And one of the first things they said on that post was notate some of your first files with .gr, so golden rule. And then in your Cursor rules, you say, when you're working on this feature and this directory and this package, reference the .gr file that is most related to this. Use that as the standard to build the rest of everything off on. I take that mentality and I scale it everywhere. We use it in our linear templates. We have linear templates that we now tell our MCP servers to say, hey, when you are building a ticket or responding or handling the workflow, check through all these things. For us, it's, you know, do we have linted, tested, and successfully built code? Do we have storybooks that reflect all the different UI and user flows? And we're looking specifically for things that exist and kind of iterating on that. It doesn't remove the need for QA. It doesn't remove the need for project management, but it kind of streamlines some of those things. So on a project where we don't necessarily have full-time individuals to fill all of those roles, I don't like to say cut corners, but we can expedite the way we're doing things so that way when it's at the finish line, I have a checklist I can go through and say, hey, did we do this, this, and this? I can see that my agent checked all these things here. Now I just need to see what's missing, what didn't get done.
100%. This is really part of the secret sauce of how we're able to deliver rapidly and high quality. It takes less people now to be able to deliver an end-to-end product that works in the wild. And that's the whole model that Vertice Labs is built on and how we can bring that to the market for our clients. And so, again, Aaron has been instrumental in helping us stand that up. So, Aaron, let me ask you this. I'm an engineer by trade. You're an engineer by trade in the trenches. It's a paradigm shift. It's a mind shift. It's a different way of working. What do you think is necessary for an engineer to adopt the tools and start changing the way they work?
Skepticism. I love these tools. I'll tell anyone who'll listen, they have completely changed my entire career. I see it. You know, I see what is happening now. It's the good, the bad. It makes it harder for junior developers to come up because they don't have experience with it. It makes it easier for senior developers because we're not relying as much on training new people as we can automate a lot of these things. But the good and the bad, being a little wary of your AI tools makes you a bit more keen on making sure everything's done correctly. They can do absolutely anything. They can do absolutely everything. And as any programmer knows, if you can think it and conceptualize it, you can probably form some sort of code to make it happen. But with all of those options, you have a ton of room for things to break or not be built correctly or just kind of be junk. So a good understanding of what you're working with and the patience to actually review the, you know, 20, 30 files your AI agent might have just created or changed and focused on, it makes a world of difference. I've seen experienced and novice developers posting everywhere about it, you know, vibe coding. I'm sure you've heard it on all of everything. And it does work. You can build proof of concepts really fast. If you know what you're doing, you can build full applications without really ever typing in the editor yourself. It changes the way you as a human are interacting with your code, which is just an abstraction turned into a bunch of zeros and ones later.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Like, it's literally just another layer of abstraction. The more computing power that we get as a species, the more layers of abstraction we get, which in the physical world, is called leverage. It's like if you use a lever to lift something heavy, it's the same thing that we're doing here, right? We leverage AI that can now do cognitive work to build faster. So I want to talk to you about something. So my experience with using the coding agents is different. And I think it differs for every engineer. When you first start, you set your golden rules. And then what I have found is once I have that set up, right, and I'm enhancing an existing application that has well-established patterns, I get additional efficiency gains to the point where I can almost one-shot entire features. So, you know, what that means is I can write one prompt to build a feature that'll send a text message, you know, when an event happens in the system. And I've done this, right? I think in practice, what actually happened is I one-shot out a feature, it built it. It was like 90% complete, and I had to go to the other 10%. But that's a huge efficiency gain. What would have taken me 2 weeks to get, you know, airtight took me 2 days. What's been your experience there?
Oh, I would definitely say the same. If you have a good code base and you're working like a software engineer, these features as they come on, you're talking about 2 days. I've done things in an hour that have taken me, kid you not, a month before. We are in a brand new world of being able to interact with the tech we write in and day out. Comes with the same stuff we talked about before. It's as long as you know what you're doing and you know what to look for, you can, it is crazy efficiency. You are building things from scratch. I think we were meeting just the other day when you were showing me on Figma. Even just a month ago, the tools that were generating front ends from scratch, they were fine, but you peek a little closer and it's just like those early AI images. Everyone's got six fingers and, you know, eyes are pointing the wrong way. And then Figma comes out with their most recent release of their tool. And I was blown away. My heart went out for anyone learning UI design right now, because not that they can't get into the field, but their job is going to change so completely. And that's really the case for everyone right now. Jobs aren't going away. They're just changing.
Yeah, they're changing, and they're changing dramatically. And so this has been how I've operated my entire career. It is, I want to know the patterns and the strategic decisions behind why we're making the technical decisions so that I can apply them in the future or know when to apply them in the future, right? So everything you know is really just a tool in the tool in your tool belt, right? So you use a screwdriver for screws and a hammer for nails, right? And so it's changing. So for like UX and UI designers who are designing experiences, I think the world is still going to need for a while people who understand why you use certain design elements in certain situations. You still need the strategic thinker, because the tools right now, Figma Make is the tool that we're talking about for designing. The tools now, they just do what you tell them, like you said, a junior engineer. They're not going to say, well, what's the bigger goal here? And if that's the bigger goal, you should do this instead. They don't do that yet. One day they will, I suspect, and probably not the too distant future. And so the people who are going to excel, kind of back to like, you know, what is the mind shift that is necessary, or the mindset that is necessary to adopt these tools, is you have to ask a bunch of the strategic questions about why we're doing something. The real benefit would be to understand the goal, so then you can navigate to achieving that goal the best way possible. And then you can use AI to do the execution for you. And I think that's where we are in the state of those tools today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something you have to be very keenly aware of when working with these AI tools. They have opinions in the same way that patterns repeat things over and over. All AI agents are really doing, all the data scientists out there will come in, correct me, hopefully somewhere, but they're looking at the big pattern of the ecosystem and all the different connections from the, I can't even imagine the scale, how much knowledge is used to train models like GPT. It is unfathomable. It is absolutely larger than you and I could ever possibly go through in one lifetime. But with all of that knowledge, get a lot of confirmation bias. I'm guilty of it myself, where I start prototyping a feature working with AI, and it tells me I'm on the right track because of something in my prompt that made it think that this is the right way to do it. And then I'm an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into it. I had a bug with the client that you and I are working on that caused a big merge error, and this was part of the guilty. I'm trying to find the issue, and it took me going back and looking through, and I'm like, I went down this rabbit hole without realizing it, because I'm just going through my normal workflows, and each model is getting better and better at doing it. They're, you know, better at kind of pushing you back in the right direction. But if you get down that wrong workflow with these tools, they'll tell you you are going the right way. They're like, yeah, that's left. And you're like, no, it's right. No, I think it's left. And it just starts hallucinating and going a little crazy, but it's where that industry knowledge is paramount, and the people using these tools being able to take a step back and actually process what is being generated and spewed out to you. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of noise.
Yeah. You know, someone asked me the other day, is like, well, when you're building agentic workflows, how do you prevent hallucination? And the short answer is you can't, right? This is a system that is designed to create based on previous patterns. And so it might identify something that it thinks fits what you're doing, but it doesn't, right? And it takes a higher level, strategic level thinking to say that's not quite right. But I did say there are ways that you can mitigate it, right? That you can put guardrails in place. And so when you think about building agentic systems, you know, that is using AI to do human level reasoning about a task, you put guardrails in. And so, you know, you might have an orchestrator AI agent and an evaluator AI agent, and then task agents, right? And so your orchestrator tells what task to happen when, and your evaluator says the task was done correctly or not, and goes back to the orchestrator and says, hey, you didn't do it right. And then your executors, your task agents are doing the work, very much like a human organization. And so when you think about building agentic systems, you have to think about designing it in the manner that you would design an org chart for a department, right? And so that's just to say, as we build thinking capabilities, we have to prepare for what happens when you allow someone or something to think. And that is outside the box, that are things that are outside the guardrails, that is a new path. And so that's how you design agent systems that scale and work in the real world.
Yeah. It's the good old echo chamber fallacy. When you have people just kind of yelling out, this is the right way, and all you hear is this is the right way, you don't have anything to come back. These different agentic systems, the goal is to provide feedback loops that kind of self-correct. And, you know, there's a million ways to do it. You can have one AI check another AI. You can have good old-fashioned linting and testing that you write yourself to kind of enforce those standards. You know, I think back on one of the first machine learning projects I ever took under my wing, It was a project called Mar.io. It was basically a neural net that controlled one of the original Super Mario games on the Super Nintendo. I found a YouTube video of this probably like 7 years ago now, of someone setting it up. So I broke out VS Code. I started copying all of the code from the video because we didn't have, there wasn't even a GitHub for it. So I'm typing everything out, writing in Lua for the first time. And I started to see in action what is happening, you know, that we see in the agents now. In this neural network, the goal was, if you get to the further to the right you go, the higher the score does. That's how neural nets kind of grade themselves. And it would randomly smash inputs until it found a right combination that worked, finding a pattern that passed the scenario you set up. And it worked really well for single instances, but it lacked a lot of that feedback to make it work. 7 years later, now we have AIs that feel like Jarvis on steroids, but we still need that same level of feedback to kind of control it, because what might work in one isolated instance, one kind of push forward, might break under any other circumstances. So being able to set up an orchestra of having UI and UX in different set tests, in your feedback loop, having actual QA go through, be it an agent or a person or written tests, these little kind of controls prevent some of those hallucinations from happening, because it's really just a bunch of patterns being repeated over and over again. And your goal is to get the pattern that works for the project you're working on.
100%. Hey, well, look, I really appreciate you doing this with me today. And as always, it's a pleasure to work with you and to talk to you.
Yeah, of course. Likewise.
Have a good one.
All right. Take care.